You guys ought to try to be a little more enthusiastic for Christmas. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here tonight. Glad to be sober. Glad to be having the privilege of participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. New people here tonight. I'm glad you're here in Alcoholics Anonymous. People within their first 30 days. You know, you hear a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't listen to some of the things that go on. You hear things about people in Alcoholics Anonymous, about groups. Talk about dictatorship in Alcoholics Anonymous, particularly if you get around these Nazi-type groups, where they talk about sponsorship and staying sober and doing stuff. It seems like you hear this. I'm going to dispel a rumor. You know, they say that all these old-timers always get somebody with less time than them to wait on them. I'm going to dispel that rumor. That's not true. Dick, how long have you been sober? Go get me a cup of coffee, would you please?
Cream and a little chocolate sugar on it.
You see what a falsehood that is? I did that to Shaw one time when he was a biggie in Oklahoma. That's one of his resentments he didn't talk about this afternoon. But I'm glad to be back here in Omaha. You know, like every time I turn around, I'm in Omaha. I don't know why. You know, I almost feel like Elizabeth Taylor's next husband. I know what's expected of me, but I don't know how to make it interesting anymore. But I am. I'd like to thank the committee for extending this privilege to me. See, to me, it's a privilege just to be able to sit here with you good people. I don't have any qualms about that. I don't have any right to be here. And everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous is because I was lucky enough to stumble into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959, stumble into you people. It doesn't. See what you newcomers got to look forward to when you're 30 years sober? You know, I pray to God that I never get so egotistical or so complacent that I get some kind of an idea in my head that I have a right to be here and to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I don't drink anymore. I always wanted to be some type of an undeserved privilege to be around you people. Because I look back on my life before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can tell you that there's nothing I did in my life before I got here that would entitle me to the good life that I live today, and just for the things that I have experienced just today. Things that people like me are really not supposed to experience, because there was nothing I did before I got here that would entitle me to those privileges. And so I'm very grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. I don't tell you that because of any particular reason, but it's necessary for me, the longer I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, to remember exactly from whence I came. Exactly. And I never want to forget a little over 37 years ago tonight. I was crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. What I remember about that night 2 days after Thanksgiving was this, that I was pulling some chicken down, or some turkey down off the wall and trying to eat it because I was hungry. And I'd come out of one of them insane blackouts of mine, and I'd taken my Thanksgiving meal that they'd stuck under the door and threw it up against the wall. And 37 years ago tonight, 2 days after Thanksgiving, that's what I was doing. Now, because of a loving God who expressed himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, tonight I sit down in a room with 20 to 30 people and experience a nice meal and engage in Alcoholics Anonymous conversation with some people and surrounded by people that I love and people who love me. It's awful hard to try to explain to anybody how you can get from where I was 37 years ago to where I was tonight evening. And it's only as I look back on it through my experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous can I see the fine handiwork of a loving God woven all the way through that, kind of prodding me along. Because when I came to you on the fourth day of November 1959, if I'd have known where I was coming that day, I wouldn't have come. I can't take any credit for even coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. So how in the hell could I have any credit for anything that's happened to me since I've been here? I didn't even know where I was coming. If I had known, I wouldn't have come here. I like to stand here and tell you that 37 years ago, I came too, and that was a result of alcohol. I like to tell you that's where alcohol and drugs took me to, but that's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to stumble into that room in November 1959. That's all. I'm as sure as I'm standing here before you tonight, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've been some type of a misfit as far back as I can remember. Always some type of a misfit. Restless, irritable, and discontent, and angry, and hostile, and bitter. Always. As far back as I can remember, I've been that way. And I didn't know that those were the symptoms of the most deadly disease that's ever been known to man. How would I know that? I hadn't been here. I hadn't investigated the book Alcoholics Anonymous and had the guidance of a sponsor. I had never had any of those things. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know whether I was born alcoholic or not. Totally immaterial to me. I was born needing an answer. And what makes that really difficult in my life is I didn't know what was wrong with me. Now, it's kind of hard to find an answer to a problem if you don't know what the problem is. It's very frustrating out there trying to find an answer to something if you don't know what's wrong with you. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me the day I came to you. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I remember sitting there when I was a child, looking around, watching all these people who I was around drank whiskey. Everybody drank whiskey. I came from a little town in Kansas, not very far from here. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. That's what they did. They made it and they drank it. It was proper. I just thought I'd throw that in. I mean, it's proper to do things in the ghettos too, folks. I'll tell you that. They drank it. They did. Saturday night they gathered up, beat each other up, drank each other's whiskey, stole each other's women. Whoever survived was the king, I guess. I don't know how they worked it out. I understood that too. That's funny. I've always understood it. I've always understood violence. It's always been a part of me. It's always been a great part of me. It's always been a part of my life before I got to you good people. I know what it's like to put your foot in somebody's belly. It's almost like a spiritual experience. I never understood how these people who did that to one another, and I never was able to understand that, how they could put their arms around one another on Wednesdays and say things like, "We love one another because we're family." That's what they said. And I don't know what that did to me. I don't know whether it scarred me psychological or not. That's... I don't even want to get into that one. I just... I just know that my inventories have told me that before I came to you, and for a long time after I was with you, I never said I love you to another human being who lives upon the face of this earth. It wasn't even part of my vocabulary. I didn't believe in it. I didn't want it. And I don't remember blaming somebody for that. I don't remember feeling ashamed of anything. I don't remember doing all these things. I don't remember what they were doing. I'm too worried about what's wrong with me to be worrying about what's going on around me. I don't know what's wrong with me. I look up one day, Grandma's standing there. Now, my grandmother lived till she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. Now, my grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober over 36 years. Big deal. I ain't had a drink for 90. Good, Granny. There's a couple of times when you should have had three or four drinks. I can tell you that. My grandmother was an amazing old lady. Man, they used to use her house for a war zone on Saturdays. She didn't care. She got up on Sunday morning, got dressed, took off, went somewhere, gone for a couple hours, come back, something's happened to her. A little sparkle in her eyes, a little lighter in her step. She danced over these crazy people, cleaned them up and cooked for them and sang songs to Jesus. I took a look at that. Stored it in my keen alcoholic mind. Then there was Grandpa. Grandpa was an entirely different deal. Grandpa used to take off on Tuesdays. He'd come back in a month or two, whenever the money ran out. And he'd come back in various shapes and forms. One time they brought Grandpa back on a wagon. He'd been shot and stabbed, thrown off the second floor balcony of a whorehouse in Kansas City. I took a look at that and figured Grandma's got the best deal. Keen alcoholic mind. Isn't that amazing? Something else I want to tell you, new people. This is the only place in the world you're going to hear about the keen alcoholic mind. You didn't hear Vinoy talking about the keen alcoholic mind this afternoon, did you? Al-Anon's never get around to mentioning the keen alcoholic mind. We do. You give us 2 seconds to answer a question and we'll give you an answer. We may not know a damn thing about the subject, but we'll give you an answer in something. But I put this deal, I figured Grandma got the best deal, and I made first in a series of bad judgments in my life. And the reason I made bad judgments because I didn't know no better and I didn't understand that there was something wrong with me. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. I had some kind of an idea that all I'd have to do is go where Grandma goes, do what Grandma does, I'd be like Grandma. I'm not like Grandma. Grandma's not alcoholic. I did not know at that time that I was bodily and mentally different from my grandmother. How would I know that? I'm a little kid, for Christ's sake. I don't know that. I don't have been here. I haven't done any of those things. I went with Grandma. I sat in Grandma's church with my grandmother when I'm a child and watched this magic transformation come over to my grandma while they're singing and doing all that stuff they do in there. The guy next to her is getting with it too, but there ain't nothing happening to me. Nothing at all. And I don't know what's going on there. And I guess that's the first time I ever felt completely and totally isolated from the world. I don't know what's happening. I've learned over a period of years hanging around with you that what I was looking for, I couldn't find because I was looking out there for something. I was looking to go over somewhere and have somebody pat me on the head and give me whatever it was they had. I was looking for somebody to say, you're all right, you don't have to do that no more, I guess. I didn't understand that everything that was necessary for me had to be come from the inside out. I always thought it had to come from the outside in. I didn't know what it was. That's what I'm thinking. I'm looking for this answer to this thing, and I'm looking everywhere it ain't. A couple of weeks later, sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house, I took a drink of whiskey. That's all I did. Something I said I was never going to do. Be like those people who did that. And the next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem in the world. You know why I'm an alcoholic? Because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. That's all. No big deal about that. I didn't know that. I damn near died finding that out. That my body does not react the same way when alcohol enters it as somebody else does, maybe Benoit. I don't. I didn't know I had this abnormal reaction to alcohol. I only know that it did something for me. It went down inside of me and it's still the screaming madness. It took me from the black pit of nothingness, stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living. It installed in me an arrogance. It said, damn you world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's an amazing thing. Anything that does that much for you, you ain't going to give it up easy. It's kind of hard to find anything to beat that. Well, I tried. That's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. Not the physical reaction I got from alcohol, that feeling of going, what got me was the thing that kicks in right behind that, that's limited to alcoholics of my type. The book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about alcoholics of my type. The book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written for alcoholics of my type. That once I take a drink of alcohol, I'm powerless not to take the next one. I didn't know that when I took a drink of alcohol, I was drinking to satisfy a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. How would I know that? I didn't know that when I was here for a period of time. I just know that alcohol did something for me, and every time I drank for the next 20 years, the same thing happened to me. Everything. I started out the same way, and I ended up the same way. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sentenced me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around out there, folks. I went from reform school to reform schools to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like nut house better. It's a little more macho. I've always felt if you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I really do. I don't think you ought to quit drinking because you puke a little either. I think you ought to hang in there. I think you ought to give it everything you got. I think Alcoholics Anonymous works better if you come here without options. I heard a guy talk in my home group not very long ago, and he said something that really knocked me out of my seat. He said, it seemed to him that the people who come here who have it the worst before they got here have it the easiest after they get here. And I'm going to stand here and tell you something. Alcoholics Anonymous is the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. Staying sober around you is the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. And if it's not the easiest thing you've ever done in your life, you sure as hell ain't ever been where I've been when I was out there having fun. That's all I can tell you. You know, I gave it everything I had when I was out there. I threw every aspiration I ever had, every dream I've ever had, every opportunity I ever had. Do you know that God gave me some type of a body that would have made me a Major League Baseball player if I wanted to be one? When I'm a kid, I could throw a baseball through a wall. I could hit a BB. I could run like a deer. I just, that kind of talent. And I love to play baseball. That's another frightening thing to me sometimes. I love baseball. I never wanted to do anything in my life before I got sober but play baseball. I was a star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates for 2 years running. I put that on a resume one time. You ought to have saw that guy's eyes when he saw that. You know, I was in a reform school one time. I was offered a scholarship to go to the University of California, Los Angeles to play baseball. All I would have had to do was come out of that reform school and go to school and play baseball. And I could have had a major college education. The guy said, well, why did you do it? I said, I don't know. I came out and took a drink. See, I didn't know that once I took the drink, I was powerless to take the next one. I didn't have a clue about that. I just wanted to drink. I hear a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous I don't understand. I guess it might be true. I really don't know. But I do know the difference between an alcoholic and a drug addict. I know there's a big, big difference between the two of them. And the big difference is between the things that happen to them once they're sober and once they start again. See, I'm an alcoholic. I never took a drink to get drunk. I never took a drink of alcohol to end up with electroshock therapy somewhere in one of them nut houses. I never took a drink of alcohol to blow a major college education or to blow a professional baseball contract. I never did any of those kind of things. I took a drink of alcohol after a period of sobriety for one particular reason, just to go, that's why I drank. Just to go, I never wanted to get drunk. I never wanted to be that far out of control. Now, a drug addict doesn't do that. A drug addict does it to get loaded and get out of here. Alcoholics like me don't want to get out of here. It was read here today in the doctor's opinion. I drank essentially because of lack of the effect, not to get out of the world. Didn't know that. You know, I'm sitting on a furlough from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. There's a reason for that, too. It was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad it was. It never saw a grape. Well, that stuff would hang you, boy. I'll tell you that. I'm sitting there drinking this stuff one day. It ain't doing nothing. I'm on this furlough. I'm sitting there drinking this stuff, and it ain't taking me where I want it to take me. See, I always want to go somewhere, some other time. But right now, with anybody else, but whoever I'm with, that's what I want to do. And I'm sitting there drinking stuff and ain't quite doing it. The guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, try these. He gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Thank God they weren't X-Lax. That's all I can tell you. We could have a whole new 12-step program called Laxatives Anonymous, I suppose. I could be standing here tonight as the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was little. But I hear stuff stupider than that in some of these things that masquerade as AA meeting. There I sit, work. Sitting on the same street corner a couple of years later, I'm on a furlough from another reform school, and I'm drinking this wine, and I'm eating these pellets, and they're not doing what I wanted to do, and a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and I ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out in the streets. I've always lived out in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I just destroy everything that comes in contact with me. There's a reason for that. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and I'm a user of people. So therefore, I'm a loser. I'm selfish, and I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving, and I got an ego bigger than this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for a long time after I was here, and maybe even a great deal of the time today, I don't know, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lives upon the face of this earth. I wasn't interested in you at all, unless you had something I wanted. Then whenever I got whatever it was that you had I wanted, I cast you aside like so much trash and I went on about my business. That's the way I lived. Now, I didn't live like that one day, one month, one year, or 5 years, or until the heat got on. I lived like that from as far back as I could ever take my first memory until a long time after I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I drift into it from time to time today. That's the nature of my illness. The book says it's selfishness and self-centeredness, and I must be rid of it or it kills me. That's what it says. In our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that. You got a thing up here. The key to staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous is giving. That's the secret here. There ain't no big deal here. No psychological ploy that we got to get through. Some thing that some pop therapist who runs through here every once in a while and puts his damn thumbprint on our program has to say. Matter of fact, I heard a guy say something to Virginia Beach the other day. I think I'll say that. You have my permission to shoot them son of a bitches if they keep coming around these meetings. There I go again. I'll tell you what happens. People like me that happen to And what's more significant about it to me today than anything that I know of? When I came to in that cell in solitary confinement a little over 37 years ago, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But they should be gone. And I didn't have any right to have them back. I still don't have any right to have anything back in my life just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything in my life today, and there's many, many things in my life today that beyond description, is some type of an unwarranted gift from a loving, merciful God that I've discovered sitting in here room with you. That's all. I don't know what's going on here. I came stumbling into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what's wrong. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was almost my last. But I didn't know what was going on here. Nobody had ever called me an alcoholic. Nobody had ever told me I had a drinking problem. I'd been called many things before I came to you. I've been called many things. I've been called a killer. I've been called a murderer. I've been called a drug dealer. I've been called a white slaver. I've been called technically and clinically insane by the people who are supposed to know. But nobody ever said, you got a drinking problem. Nobody ever said that to me. It wasn't popular to be an alcoholic in those days. And there wasn't anybody putting you on an insurance form to be one, either. A lot of things that didn't happen. I don't know whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. But there I was. And I sit in this room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that day talked to me about being sober. And I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me. And the reason I didn't think that is because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. Just physically sober. But it always seemed to be my problem. Always seemed to be my problem. When I'm sober, I'm faced with things that I can't stand. I'm faced with me and the deeds that I had done in my lifetime. You see, I never was one of those type of people whoever was able to block off what he did. I was always aware of whatever was going on in my life. Oh, I was insane, clinically insane, and I started having insane blackouts after my brain exploded in a courtroom. But prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had visions in my head that were driving over nightmares that I couldn't get rid of when I got to you. I had visions of standing outside of a gravesite, handcuffed between two detectives while they buried my baby brother. With the words of my mother ringing in my ear, look what you've done now, scum, you've killed our baby. I never got over the look that my mother had in her eyes that day standing on that gravesite. I never saw that. And I never got it out of my mind. It was burned into my consciousness and my sobriety, or whenever I was sober or undrunk, a better word. Or when I was free from any type of mood-altering chemicals while I was confined in an institution somewhere, I saw those eyes looking at me across that gravesite. And I didn't know how to do anything but just stick my head down and shuffle my feet. I didn't know how to cry. I didn't know how to feel anything. But I took a vow myself when I was 10 or 11 years old. I'd never show anybody any human emotions again long to live. I couldn't do much standing at that gravesite that day because I'm standing there with some type of an image. I'm some type of a big-time gang leader in my neighborhood. And some of my gang members are standing around that gravesite. And I can't show them that I'm weak. I can't show them that I care. I can't show them anything about what macho I am and how bad I am. I can't show them nothing. And I feel everything and can't show anything. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible way to have to live. And people try to tell me Alcoholics Anonymous is tough. That's tough living. I went on to the penitentiary. I stayed there 4.5 years and came out of there 4.5 years sicker than I was when I went in there. Just because I go somewhere and sit for a period of time does not mean I get any better. I get worse with the passage of time, even during long and total periods of absence. My disease just keeps getting worse, worse and worse and worse. I didn't know that. I had no way of knowing that. But I came out of the institution bound and determined I had the deal beat, and 6 months later I'm laying in a nut house kicking and screaming. And I made my round to some of the better laughing academies in the world interviewing psychiatrists. What I pray to God is my last interview with one of them head jockeys was in a federal government hospital in Fort Worth, Texas, a little time before I came to in the Los Angeles County Jail on my deathbed. I remember moving into this room, I remember like it was yesterday. I remember being led into this room and sit down and put in a chair and staring up against the wall. I remember looking across the desk and looking around the room. The doctor wasn't there yet. I remember looking at all the plaques and the diplomas and the degrees and the things that went on. And I think for a moment that there was some type of a ray of hope that came to me that day, just for a second. I thought to myself, maybe this is where the journey ends. Maybe this is where it's all over. Maybe this is the man that has the key to everything. Maybe this is the guy that will tell me, you're okay, to go erase all this stuff. You just go and get out of there anymore. Because that's all I wanted. The gal in our group said, I just want to put my pack down. I'm just tired and heavy. But the man came in that day, the doctor, and he sat down across his desk and he looked at me and he started fingering through my jacket, and the first thing he said to me, he hadn't said two words, but every word and every bay of hope that I had sitting in that desk before he got there went out the window. He said to me, Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems. I was told that in Hutchinson State Reform School in Hutchinson, Kansas when I was a kid. I was told that by a counselor in Juvenile Hall in Los Angeles when I was a kid. In the Whittier State Reform School, I was told that. San Quentin State Prison, Folsom State Prison, I was told those things. But none of those people ever took into consideration every time they told me that I was as physically sober as I am right now. Physically sober. How many times I wanted to scream out, I'm a good doctor, don't you understand? Because they don't. I'm sorry. If you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. You just won't. But if you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. I mean, that's really the truth. I'm sitting over there today, listening to Benoit talk. And she's going through all this crap. And my thought to her was, drink! Why don't you drink? That's the way I think. Why she don't? She explained to you why she drinks. She takes a drink, she goes, ew. That makes me dizzy. Hell, if I didn't drink any more than that, wouldn't do that anymore for me, I wouldn't drink it either. See, that's what you can't understand. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works. That's what came crawling into you that day. I can't even call myself an animal. I don't know what I was. There's no word, there's nothing, description that I have ever found that would describe me to you the way I felt about me. I had no feelings about anything. I was full of hate and rage. I had no hope whatsoever. I'm 27 years old and my life's over with. I ain't got no place else to go except one of them institutions for the rest of my natural life. Or a bullet in my brain or some alley in my neighborhood. That's all. I got nothing left. And you didn't look like much to me. I moved in and sit out in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. Had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. There I said, I don't know what's going on here. And I'll tell you what's frightening to me today sometimes. Here I sit in his room that day, and I'm staring at the answer I had sold my soul for. But I didn't recognize the answer because I didn't know what the problem was. I was an alcoholic. I don't know what's going on there. I'm kind of fascinated by these people. I can't figure them out. I don't understand anybody like this. I don't understand why anybody would do what these people did. There's a couple old gals there. I thought I'd wait for them to talk. One of them got up, and she's old. weren't very many young people in Alcoholics Anonymous in those days. And if they were, they went up that penitentiary where I was at. This old gal got up to talk one day and said she drank for a long time. Hell, you could look at her and know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, "I used to drink." I said, "I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too." See, I knew everything when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useful information. Well, every back row in every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever been to is loaded with intellectual giants. They have a tough time staying sober, but they're intellectual giants. My sponsor got a word for it. Nothing personal. My sponsor coined it one time at a room, one time where people sit outside the meeting or stand around a wall, called in the half measure section. That's true. That's really true. I find out that what my old sponsor used to say is really true. If you want to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to buy the whole package. You got to buy it all, not just what you want of it, but you just want of it got you here. I'm fascinated by these people. I don't understand these people. You got to understand it. I don't understand them. The reason I don't understand them is because I'm a taker. And takers don't understand givers. These people are giving a little just for the hell of giving it. I don't understand that. I've never seen people like this before in my life. These people drove 185 miles up those old back roads to spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who made fun of them. I tell you how sick that is. I'm sitting in a penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home. I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. Keen alcoholic mind, boy. Tell you that. But if you'd asked me, I'd have told you I'm hip. Yeah, Daddy. I got it together. Don't know what's going on here. I asked a guy one time, "What do you get out of coming up here anyhow?" I was a little more blunt and a little more weirder than that. He told me, he gave me an answer that I didn't understand. He said, "When you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it." You know that's deep. Try to figure out what couch I heard that from one time. But it's really true. You know what I've discovered since I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous? I've discovered a very true fact here. This is not something that I read about. This is not something that my therapist told me about. This is not something my sponsor told me. This is something that I have learned sitting in rooms like this with you 4, 5, 6 times a week for all these years. I don't know who it was to talk today, but somebody talked today about crossing over an invisible line from controlled to uncontrolled drinking. I think it was the lady this morning. I don't have any qualms with that. But I do know that there's an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that as well as I'm standing here. And I know that if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over that invisible line, you're going to die drunk. I know that. And the reason I know that is because I've been watching it happen around here for over 36 years now. And that's a line where you've got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over that line, you're going to die drunk. You can just forget about all the meetings you go to and all those other things. That's a fact. That's not an opinion, that's a fact, based on my experience of sitting here watching these things go on. There's givers and there's takers. And the takers seem to be the winners around here. The givers seem to be the people who seem to have the light step and the easy being. That's what these people were who came to me in that penitentiary. That was my attraction to them. They seemed to have something about them that I didn't understand, I didn't recognize. There was some like an air about them, the same air about them my grandmother might have had, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it was the attraction. Maybe these people were doing something for somebody else. Maybe they were doing God's business. Maybe they're out about God's work. I don't know what it was, but they had it. And I wanted it, even though I didn't know what it was. And I sit in your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'd get up at podiums like this and tell me that you were alcoholic. And you didn't drink anymore, and everything. And my reaction to that was just very negative. I said, well, I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not alcoholic either, and I'm crazy, and I'm not drinking. I'm as physically sober as you are, Buster, and I'm nuts. I don't know what's wrong with me. I heard him say things like, get into action, do things. I equated action with moving. Movement, I figured. Get up, go get a cup of coffee, let somebody see you. That's movement. Stumble across somebody, make them, disturb them in the meeting. That's movement. Hang around till the dance starts and then come in. That's movement. All kinds of crazy ideas, I thought. And I did that. I moved quick here. Picked up ashtrays. Smiled. Went back and set an inventory point and died. Because I know I'm doing what you told me, and my answer to that is I'm not alcoholic. I can't be alcoholic, for Christ's sake. If I was alcoholic, all I'd have to do is not drink and pick up these damned ashtrays and I'd be okay. But I'm not. I had just described to me the disease of alcoholism. It's in entirety. I didn't know that then because I hadn't studied anything. I got up on Sunday morning a long, long time ago. I don't even know what day it was. I didn't know it was a day I'd lived my entire lifetime for. I had no way of knowing that morning when I woke up. I had no way of knowing as I went about my morning business of showering and drinking coffee and having breakfast. But I was going to go sit in a room about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And somebody was going to put the key into the gates of hell and let me out of there. I didn't know that because I didn't even know I was in hell. But if I'd have been armed with that knowledge, I would have not been sober tonight. I would have not come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd have went to the places that had never seemed to have the answers for me. All my life that I had been to, I'd have went to the preacher or the teacher or the psychiatrist or the counselor or the warden or the therapist or whatever they were at that moment. And I'd have missed everything I've got today in these last 36 years. I wasn't armed with that knowledge. Because I went in and sat down in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't remember my attitude being any different. I don't remember feeling any more a part of than any other time. I don't remember being less insane than I was that morning. I only know the little man that I knew that did 23 flat years in the penitentiary, who was my manager when I was a star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates. Stood at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous that Sunday morning and told me something I've never forgotten. It makes more sense to me today than anything that I know. It'll make more sense to me tomorrow than anything I've ever learned. He told me that I didn't have to live that way anymore if I didn't want to. He said, you don't have to do it like this no more. Nobody had ever told me that. They'd been telling me all my life, don't drink, swallow, smoke, and shoot. But they didn't tell me how to do it. After the meeting, I ran up to him. I said, Les, how do you learn how to live? He looked at me and he smiled and he put his arm on my shoulder, much like my sponsor puts his arm on my shoulder today. He said, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get it, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. You know, I guess that little man prayed real hard because I've been a student of the book Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day. And the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I haven't looked for anything else. I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world. I'm not looking for a way to cure all of society here. I'm not looking for a way to be a perfect husband, or a perfect father, or a perfect grandfather, or a perfect human being. I'm looking for a way to live peacefully, comfortably, and joyously with me and the loving God that made me. And I'll tell you, most of my life is spent like that, particularly when I'm with you. That's why I come back here all the time, because that's the way I want to feel. You know what the greatest single thing that ever happened to me in my life is? It's not getting sober. The greatest single thing that ever happened to me in my life is not coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and the good life that's been afforded me since I've been here. The greatest single thing that ever happened to me in my life happened to me sitting in a room with a man doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. I heard myself say to that man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. I know what's wrong with me. Something I never knew before that moment. Something I know right now is something I've known all day long. I'm an alcoholic and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I couldn't have your program. And there's a reason for that. I separated me from you. I was not like you. I was better than you, or worse than you, or smarter than you, or hipper than you, or slicker than you, but I wasn't like you. When I became just like you, alcoholic, it became necessary for me to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 4,000 years of recorded history. This is the only thing that's ever worked for people like me, alcoholics. And I'm what the book Alcoholics Anonymous described as an alcoholic. That's why I know I'm an alcoholic. I came out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961, to a world I didn't know anything about. I had never functioned out there in the world as a productive human being in society. I lived in gangs, and I ran in gangs, and I hurt people, and I did what people like me who live in the streets do. That's all I did. I stole everything I needed, and if I did do something, I just took it away from me. That's the way I lived my life. I came out here armed with only one thing, that I sat in a penitentiary for 19 months with a dream that someday you would let me come and sit with you. I never one time in my wildest, fondest imagination ever dreamed that you would ever allow me to do anything with you or for you, because I didn't think I was worthy of it. I didn't think there were any people like me, any scumbags like me anywhere in the world. There weren't very many of them. There hadn't been very many of them. And so I came out here. My mother fell off the steps that day, blind drunk. I picked her up, put her on a couch, said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." I'd like to stand here and tell you that my mother got sober. I'd like to be able to tell you one of them wonderful AA stories. I got sober, my mother got sober, my dog got sober, my kids got sober, my grandchildren are members. We're all members of this fellowship. Ain't that funny? It ain't been my experience. I've lived in some nightmares out there. My mother died 3 years ago, January. She got drunk and fell down, and she never came out of the hospital. You want to have something tear your heart out? Sit around in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, happy, joyous, and free, and watch the person you love most in the world come in and out of these rooms for 30 solid years. And never one time did she ever get more than 3 or 4 weeks sober. She drank until she could no longer drink, until she could physically no longer drink, and then she'd come in here and sit because she could no longer sit in here. My mother died with me at her bedside. I'm the last thing in this world my mother ever saw before she died. She saw me. See nobody now. Me. This thing that she used to have to come to institutions and she locked up in cages. The things she saw in straitjackets and all kinds of bullet wounds and all kinds of things that she saw crawling around her house. I was the last thing my mother ever saw. The last month my mother lived was hell and wheel. I had to have her legs amputated. I had to have somebody run into the hospital room when she'd just come out of surgery and say, "Johnny's the one that had your legs cut off." And I had to walk in a room and see the same look of my mother's eyes sitting in that bed that I saw at the gravesite. But I also sit there and took care of the things I had to take care of. Alcoholics Anonymous is responsible for that. Isn't anything I'm capable of doing. Selfish, self-centered, self-serving people like me only think about themselves. I'm not capable of taking time out of my busy life every day to go sit in a hospital room with a sick old woman. Yet I did. Everybody in this program that I loved who got very sick, I've had the privilege of going and sitting with them. The man that I love more than anything in the world, more than any other man that I've ever known in my life, the only man that was ever been a father to me in my life, I sit and watch him. The last year he lived. I did for him what he did for me when I was an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I put him in my lap and rocked him to sleep and loved him to death. I'm not capable of doing things like that. Selfish, self-centered people like me aren't capable of doing stuff like that. I'm doing stuff like that when I'm going through a very painful divorce, a very shocking, degrading, fearful divorce. Ashamed of the things I've done. I'm doing things like that. But it set me away from it. It kept me away from all the madness and through the business failures that were going on at that time, from my baby daughter who was out running the streets. I got to go sit with that old man and hold his hand and tell him I loved him. I've learned fabulous lessons in Alcoholics Anonymous by watching the people I love try to destroy themselves. The fabulous lesson I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is this: I don't have the power to get anybody sober, for God's sake. I don't have the power to get them drunk or to keep them out there either, or to make them sick. I'm insulted by the idea that somebody thinks that I can make them sick. I'm insulted by that very insinuation that I hear from time to time. I can't make anybody sick. It takes somebody very sick to be around me. I can't make them well either. I'm not God. I have no power to heal. I have no power to do anything. I don't even have any power to keep me sober. I'm as powerless today, 36 years later, as I was 36 years ago when I got here. I don't have any more or any less power now than I had when I ran the streets like a mad dog. I don't have any power. It seemed like that when I'm hooked into the power that generated into these rooms, that I have enough power to sustain me for a period of time, and I live with some degree of peace and some degree of calm. Because I've sat in your rooms in Alcoholics Anonymous in these last 30-some-odd years, and it might be the only time of the day that I had any peace whatsoever. And it took me a long, long time to understand what my sponsor, Norm Alpe, was trying to tell me when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, when he told me, "Why don't you just shut up and sit still?" I didn't understand what he was talking about. I learned about it, I know about it today. He taught me many valuable lessons. I used to call him up in the middle of the night just to see if he'd answer the phone. That's all. I didn't want anything. I just make up excuses. "Norm," he said, "what do you want, jackass?" I'd say, "Norm, my program ain't working." He'd say, "Try ours." And he'd say, "Jackass, your program never did work." That's true. My program don't work, folks. If my program worked, I sure as hell wouldn't be in Omaha. That's really true. If my program worked, I'd be in Long Beach. Tired because I'd played golf today. I'd be sitting at home with that woman that I love and the two little kids running around the house. If my program worked. My program don't work. My program got me crawling around the cell in solitary confinement, drifting in and out of total insanity. That's what my program and my best thoughts and actions got me. Our program works. And the reason I know that is because when I came out of that penitentiary, I had a piece of paper in my pocket from the leading psychiatrist in the state of California that said I was clinically insane, that I'd never be able to live outside of an institution without some type of medication in my system. If I walked out of an institution with that type of paper in my pocket today, I could become a poster boy for Prozac, for Christ's sake. I have lived outside of that institution for over 34 and a half years. Nothing in my system stronger than an aspirin. So don't tell me that Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work. Don't tell me that the actions and the directionship of a strong guiding hand of a sponsor and the loving, kind support of a home group doesn't work. Don't tell me that all these other outside agencies and all these other kind of things are good. Not for me, they're not. This is the only therapy that's been introduced in my life in the last 36 years of my life. And I'll stand here and tell you, I don't know a single solitary soul who lives upon the face of this earth who lives any better than I do. Oh, I know a lot of people who've got more things than I do. But I don't know anybody who lives any better than I do. You know what it's like to live in a world all day long and want nothing for yourself whatsoever? I live that way. I don't live that way all the time because I'm a basic human being. And my selfishness and self-centeredness seems to creep in from time to time when I get the I wants, I need, I gotta have. But most of the time I live that way. Most of the time I just can't hardly wait to be around you. You know one of the greatest things I do? I live for Wednesday lunch so I can go have lunch with my sponsor. A guy by the name of Clancy. Norm Alpey was my sponsor for 22 years, but he died. I spent a year, a miserable year, trying to run my own life again after I was sober for a while. Chuck was sick. One day I asked Clancy to be my sponsor. And he said to me, I'm going to give it a whirl. And I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, why don't you start off calling me every day and coming to the Wednesday night meeting? I said, okay. That's been almost 14 years now. I still call him every day. I still go to the Wednesday night meeting. Somebody said to me, you still call him every day? And I said, yeah. And they said, why? I said, he hasn't told me not to yet. I can't run my own life, folks. I'm sorry. I can't, but it's insignificant to me. I don't want to run my own life. I get along real well when I'm not running my own life. I have a lot of trouble when I kind of do it on my own. I kind of stumble and fall, pick myself up, wander around, bump into walls, get painful feelings in my gut, which I don't like. Get feeling guilty and ashamed and apart from, knowing I ain't doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I get bad, I feel bad about that. So I can come and sit with you and get back on the track, or I can go sit with my sponsor and explain to him. And my sponsor would say, well, why don't you try doing this? This is what I did when I felt that way. This is what I do when I feel that way. This is what I do when I feel my humanness. So I try it. And it works. About 45 days ago, my baby daughter came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sitting watching her since she was a senior in high school, kill herself. She was a senior in high school, I threw her out in the streets. Told her if she wanted to live that way, that's her business, but I wasn't going to sit around and watch her live that way. Hardest thing I ever done in my life, watched my baby daughter walk down the street with that little box in her hand. Going out there to run around with people like me. See, I know what's out there in them streets, folks. You don't have to explain them to me. If you ain't been out there, they can't explain them to you, too. I'm not talking about living out there until you get tired and going home to mommy and daddy. I'm talking about living out there until they come and get you. She turned herself into Alcoholics Anonymous. She got a gal in our group as a sponsor. and she's off of this thing like a rocket. Comes into my house. She struck up a tremendous friendship with my lady. And they're like sisters, held her down there at the same age. They're all sisters. There ain't nothing like them young women to keep you young, I'll tell you that. But my life is tremendous. She comes down here, she puts her arms around me, she tells me she loves me. I was at a meeting at the Pacific Group not very long ago, and Jackie was there. She just asked Karen to be her sponsor. And somebody who's known her since she was a little girl said to her, what are you doing in Alcoholics Anonymous, Jackie? She looked at him and she said, I run out of options. I don't have any more options. Now, I don't know where Jackie's going to stay sober or not. That's not my business. But at least she's been here with you and she's had a chance. And at least the thing that I have done in all these years is keep the door open in case she wants to come. So when she got ready to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, she wasn't afforded the opportunity to be frightened by what type of an asshole Alcoholics Anonymous made her daddy. And so my life is really a complete thing. It's gone a complete circle. Everything in my life today is complete. Everything in my life today is current. I have people in my life that I love. I have a lady and a family in my life that I'm starting to raise. My daughter's sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. My bills are all current. And I'm in love with a God that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love you. I probably love you more today than I've ever loved you before in my life. There's people in this room that I would lay right down here on this floor and die from. I love Dick Parker. Dick and I have got real close the last 3 or 4 years. We just came together. I love Peggy. I was sitting down in a restaurant in Virginia Beach the other night. The lights were shining and there were some seagulls. These seagulls were coming to the light. Some gal said, you know, there's a gal from Omaha, Nebraska, said she, seagulls come to light. And I said, you don't believe all that crap, do you? And she looked out, she said, there they are. And I said, oh, it's true. The seagulls do come to light. I saw them. And then there's Jim and Benoit. I'm a very fortunate man. Then there's Hillary over there, who I've loved ever since I first seen him come to AA. I'm glad to see him. What I come here for in Alcoholics Anonymous. Got last night. I got this morning. I got this afternoon. And I got sitting in that chair when I was listening to her read the fifth chapter and him read the tradition. And to look around and watch the people as they come down. You see, in those very brief moments of my life, I'm more interested in what's going on in your life than I am moment. And my very own. And in those brief moments of my life, I'm about as close to my God as I'm ever going to get. I ain't ever going to be any closer to God than that. Sitting here watching you, the children, and play like his children. To see you laugh, and to see you cry, and to see you sing, and to see you dance. To see God's children at play. It makes me realize there is a God. The thing that I searched for all my life, I found you sitting here watching you. I don't need to go anywhere else to know that there's God or to find any answer to anything. All I got to know is that there is a God. And I do know that everything that's necessary in my life, that my fulfillment is going to be given to me from my Father God. Because I love my children and I know God loves me like his children. because how in the world could I get from where I was 37 years ago to where I am tonight, except by the long, guiding and firm hand of a loving God. It doesn't make me special. And it doesn't make me one of God's chosen people. It just makes me one of his kids. I don't know what to tell you if you're new. But I do know that I have one prayer that I make at every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I go to where there's people there. I pray that you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous until you can find out what's wrong with you. To find out if you're afflicted with this deadly killer disease and to realize that we have a solution here. And the solution is to be rid ourselves of self so we can be automatically for God. You see, everything I have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Every living thing I may ever hope to have in my life, I will owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you better believe this. It's a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA, and good folks like you, I could have missed it all. God bless you. Thank you.